their secret mountain lair somewhere in Colorado. This is the Image Doctors Photography Podcast with your hosts, Jason Odell and Rick Walker.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Image Doctors Photography Podcast. I'm Jason Odell.
And I'm Rick Walker.
Good to have you back. Good to see you again, Rick, although we just spent 3 days in a car together.
So close quarters. 1,500 miles, I think?
Just a shade under 1,500 miles over 3 days out to Utah and back. And all the lovely things that are associated with summertime driving on interstates, meaning road work season. So it's fun times. But no, we had a great time, and we're going to talk about our little trip, because we started out with sort of one basic idea, and then we kind of got on a little whim, and we just did some stuff. So that was kind of fun.
The basic part that we'll talk about is astrophotography that we were doing out there, and we'll talk about a little bit of the planning that you did on it. Mm-hmm. But before we get into that, we do want to mention one thing, because we've talked a little bit about the new DxO Nik collection 4. And as our listeners know, we started liking it, and then we were running into some nasty bugs. And so we just stopped.
Yeah, it was technical problems.
Yeah, and they came out with a version 4.1 release this week that did a good job at fixing some of the key problems that we were seeing. It was after another fix that they did that was targeted against problems with higher resolution cameras. So we'll talk about it, you know, maybe next week, you know, in terms of our overall thoughts on it. But they have made some nice improvements. Quick punchline thing is we probably would recommend it at this point.
And if you already have this software and you haven't updated, get the 4.1, because it solves a lot of performance issues. A lot of the bugs that we had related to performance and sliders and previews not showing, everything seems to be functioning better. It has some room for improvement, as all software does, but this is far more stable than what the previous I think it was 4.08, which was problematic for us. So get 4.1, because it fixes a lot of bugs. And it makes it far more usable. So I'll be definitely digging into it more this week, putting it through more of its paces now that it's more stable.
So going back to our trip, we did a quick trip out to Eastern Utah, and specifically the trip involves staying at Goblin Valley State Park and doing some astrophotography. And both of us had been there before, me a little bit less, maybe. I was just there for some midday things, but it's a cool spot. How about you talk a little bit about exactly why you got the idea of Goblin Valley and some of the thought processes regarding astrophotography, subjects, how to plan those kinds of things, et cetera.
Well, a couple of years ago, I wanted to run a night sky photography workshop, and I've done some quick ones here in Eastern Colorado, but you know, the conspiracy of nighttime photography is clouds. That's a real problem. Mm-hmm. And weather. And generally in Colorado, it's just too damn cold. I'll be frank. It is just not fun to be out there at 2 a.m. in April, and you know, when the Milky Way is low on the horizon at those times, and it's too unpredictable. And the other thing about night sky photography that I discovered, you know, when I was writing my little ebook on this back in, I think I wrote it back in like 2015 or 16, I don't remember, maybe earlier, but whatever, I have a night sky ebook. And with this, we're not talking about the kind of photography where you're slapping your camera on a telescope. Mm-hmm. We're talking, you know, just getting a photo of a star or a planet. That's cool, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about realistically landscape style photography that includes stars and usually the Milky Way if possible. It doesn't have to be, but that's certainly an exciting subject and something that digital photography has really opened up, right? So the technology with film was not, it was impossible. I mean, you really couldn't get Milky Way shots with film unless you had some really sophisticated equipment. But with digital, you can do this quite easily with just a tripod and what they call a sort of short exposure night sky photography. And by short, you mean under 30-second long exposures.
Right.
So one of the things you want to have, you need kind of two ingredients. The first ingredient is you want somewhere that's dark and not a lot of light pollution. And the second ingredient is generally you want somewhere that has some interesting object that you can use as a silhouette in your foreground. You know, something, and you've seen the shots kind of that people might do at like Dead Horse Point or, you know, Horseshoe Bend, you know, where you've got some landscape and then there's the Milky Way above it and it's gorgeous. And, you know, those are generally more complicated than single shots, but that's the idea. You want something with some interesting terrain. And Goblin Valley State Park in Utah, which is kind of in the middle of nowhere, checks those boxes. It is a registered dark sky location. So, I mean, there is virtually no light pollution there whatsoever.
And then one of the things that you ran onto is that they do have a campsite. But they also have a couple yurts that you could rent. And the way this popped up is you saw there was some availability there, booked it. And we stayed in a yurt at Goblin Valley. And if you look on our Facebook page, you can see a picture of what that yurt looked like there. It almost looks like a, you know, something out of the movie The Martian, you know, with the red rock and this little white.
It's nice. It's a permanent
structure.
Right. It's a permanent kind of tent. It's got walls. It had a little bit of electricity in it, believe it or not, fan, which was important because, my goodness, the temperatures were cranked up. You know, July in Utah, go figure, right? I mean, surprise.
Yeah, the highs while we were there were like 104 degrees Fahrenheit or about 40 Celsius. So toasty.
Right.
Toasty.
And I should point out, one of the things about this particular state park is that it closes at 10 p.m. generally. So you can't get into the park or stay. They will kick you out if you're there and you do not have a camping permit, whether or not you're camping there.
Right.
You know, so a camping permit of some kind is important if you intend to be there, you know, late enough. And in the summer, sunset isn't until almost 9 p.m. in some case, or in earlier in the summer, it's even later than that. So there's trade-offs. You got to look at, when does the Milky Way rise in the sky? Where is it going to be? What time is sunset? You know, when you want to be there. So we decided to quote unquote camp in a yurt. Now, for us, that's about a 7-hour drive to get down to there.
Yeah. And what we did is we actually stayed in Green River, just in a normal hotel the night before, and then did a little excursion down to Capitol Reef National Park. That was going to be our plan, just to do some shooting for the day down there, get down there, you know, somewhat early, not right at sunrise, because this was just more of a fun additional activity. You hadn't been there before,
it's so about 100 miles too. It's not like some place you just pop out for sunrise.
No, but we got down there, we had a little bit of trouble with the rental car that we had, where the all-wheel drive system wasn't engaging and staying engaged. So that limited some of the things that we can do there. It's nice to have at least, you don't necessarily need a Jeep, but it's nice to have at least all-wheel drive for some of the areas. So we ended up having to bail out of there a little bit sooner than planned. And then, so we decided, well, why don't we go to Bryce Canyon?
Right, it's only 2 hours away. Famous last words. It's only another 2 hours. But, you know, we were sitting there in the car and it's, you know, what was it, 9:30, 10 a.m. And you're thinking, okay, it's not going to be sunset until almost 9 p.m. We're looking
and
at
it's
almost
hotter than hell. So it's nice to be in air conditioning.
Rather just drive in an air conditioned vehicle than sit around. Because frankly, Goblin Valley, as interesting as it is, midday light, it's not ideal. It's just full of these really cool hoodoos. I mean, it's a otherworldly Martian kind of landscape place. It's very cool.
And both Capitol Reef and Bryce are gorgeous places. They're very different in terms of the experience that you get there. Capitol Reef, you almost feel like you have the national park to yourself at times.
Yeah.
It's so uncrowded, and there are lots of little areas to explore, and there's some cool shooting, but there aren't, in general, the really iconic places that everyone has seen, which, you know, tends to attract a lot of people. There are many beautiful shooting locations, mm-hmm. but it is helpful to have at least all-wheel drive. Whereas Bryce, you know, the whole area out by the entrance is just like a tourist zoo, you know, yeah. and lots of people in the park, but it's gorgeous.
And, it is and the shooting gorgeous. From Bryce is more, you know, overlooks, and you can hike down into it, but you don't need to. And it's mostly the overlooks that you shoot from Bryce. Mm-hmm. So neither of those parks are ones that you would consider, you know, a place where you would stay for a week necessarily, no. Unless you were really hardcore and doing that. So it worked out that way. You know, and ironically, you know, Bryce, even though we were there after lunch, you know, midday, it still worked. I got some nice shots from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just some of its characteristics. I mean, you've got all these nice warm rocks and, you know, the light kind of comes down in there and then bounces around a lot. So warm, slightly diffused light, that's rarely a bad thing. So yeah,
that's right.
You can do okay there.
Now, interestingly enough, you know, again, I packed my bag thinking night photography, and we'll talk more about that. But mm-hmm. knowing that we'd probably be out and about, not necessarily knowing we were going to go all the way to Bryce, but knowing I was going to be out, I just said, you know, let me just toss in a lens that I can use during the day. And again, it was one we've talked about in the past, that 24 to 200 Nikon Z lens. And I just look at my shots, I'm like, wow, this lens really delivers quite nicely.
Yeah.
Very happy with lens. What it does. I mean, yeah, it really could be, other than aperture, you know, being a little slower, it really lends itself to being a nice complement to something wide if you needed it. And you could pair that with, you know, the wider lens, just because its performance at the widest settings isn't quite as good. That's where it tends to be the weakest. It's not bad, it's just weaker. But looking at my shots that I shot, anything over 35 millimeter focal length, they were pretty much sharp edge to edge, and landscape, right. F8, yeah. F11. I mean, it was great. I'm always impressed with this lens, because it doesn't seem like it should be that good. It just, yeah. It seems like it's an all-purpose, all-in-one lens, and it should have compromises, and it just makes fewer compromises than I would expect on paper. So,
and I took more than normal Trinity wide angle right. zoom, standard telephoto zoom, and that was fine too. It was not a problem to, especially, you know, shooting mainly out of a car, it was fine, and I like it,
right? And it was all handheld stuff midday.
Oh yeah,
no problem. You know, I didn't bust the tripod out until we got back to Goblin Valley. So there we go, you know, like, so we ended up with a day, we logged about, I don't know, 400 and something miles in the vehicle on mm-hmm. maybe even more than that. I can't remember exactly, but it was a lot of driving day time.
Pretty area though.
Oh, just gorgeous. And we even came out of, due to some construction, we had to take a detour out the back of Bryce. And we went through this canyon area that was just stunning.
Yeah. Red Canyon, I think is its name. It's like a smaller version of Bryce Canyon that is very accessible, and I think it would be a fun place to shoot.
Absolutely. Oh yeah, I took some shots just with my phone, just so I knew that they were there.
We couldn't linger at that point because we had a ways back to Goblin Valley to get in the yurt and get set up and everything. But it would have been a really nice place to shoot.
Yeah, it was quite incredible. It was part of what's called the Dixie National Forest in Utah. And so that was on Utah State Highway 12, which is a scenic highway that goes through Capitol Reef, I believe. So it was just kind of nice. Lots of places where you could pull out and do shooting, and you were closer to the formation. But I just remember how vibrant the red rocks were. And, you know, and we see red and orange rocks plenty out here in Colorado. It's not like we have any shortage of those. These were just vivid. I mean, it was Let me put it this way. I'm looking at some of my photos from these places. I don't need to touch the saturation slider because if I do, it quickly goes into that was too much and I shouldn't have done that.
Right. Your image might suddenly burst into flames.
Yeah, I mean, it really isn't necessary. It's one of those times where the in-camera settings are almost all you need. You know, it's just...
Yeah. So we got back to Goblin Valley. Got into our yurt. It was a bazillion degrees inside the yurt.
Yeah.
Because I've been out in the hot sun all day. And fortunately, they have a little swamp cooler in there, and we were able to get the temperature down a little bit. I won't say it ever got cool inside there.
We went from hot to we went from unbearable to tolerable hot.
Right.
But that's
the cool thing about it is, you know, we did a little bit of checks around the area for shooting locations, and what we were wanting is something that had a nice backdrop of rocks that would be silhouetted, and then the Milky Way. And it turned out that we could shoot from the deck of the yurt.
Yes, this was
which
very
was wonderful.
Absolutely.
It was just really nice because, you know, if you've done astrophotography, it involves a lot of hanging around, you know, waiting for the sky to get dark enough, and you know, you want to set up well in advance so that you can see your subject well.
And it's a lot nicer when you're in the shade with a cold drink in your hand and a chair to sit, a deck chair.
Oh, gosh,
and
yes.
That's a nice situation.
That was very good. That was just a very pleasant shooting situation.
The other thing, too, with night photography, you should point out, when you want these foregrounds, they almost always work best, with some exceptions, to have something going up, because you're going to be pointing your camera upwards anyway, either a vertical composition, depending on the time of the year, where the Milky Way, because the Milky Way is going to change its angle. And right now it was kind of nice. The Milky Way was relatively horizontal in the sky. And it just so happened that it went over these rock formations that were in front of our little yurt there. We weren't 100% sure that it was going to work out because, you know, you're trying to pre-visualize this. We were using some tools. There's an app that I mentioned before called Sky Guide. It's at least for iOS. I don't know. There's probably an Android equivalent. It's very nice for this. But even then, you know, it's like, is it going to show up or not? And sure enough, when we started to see the Milky Way just towards the end of twilight, and you could start to see the faintest bits coming out, and the sky was still blue in our photos, you could tell it was going to run right over the top of these rock formations, making it perfect.
Right. And... you know, we went kind of different directions with the lenses we were using. Mm-hmm. You were using an autofocus 20mm 1.8. I was using a manual focus lens, a Rokinon, also goes under Samyang brand some places, SP 14mm 2.4 that was adapted to the camera. And I'd done a little bit of research. And it seems to be, at least from what I could tell, a decent balance of optical performance. And I was very happy with how it performed. I was shooting it at 2.8, you know, so just stop down a half stop. It was absolutely fine. And you, the price wasn't too bad. There are cheaper things out there, but apparently not quite as good optically. There are also slightly more expensive options that I didn't really pursue. So this was a good balance, and I was happy with it. It seems very well made. Focusing action is very nice. It's nicely damped. It's smooth. It's not likely to get bumped.
Well, focus is huge. And if you recall, you know, for our listeners who've been paying attention, you know, if you remember the last time we went out, we froze our butts off and our fingers. But the Nike, I had just gotten the 20mm Z, you know, the 1.8, and it is definitely better than the F mount version that, you know, that I had in the past. But the biggest problem that we were having was with the Nikon Z bodies. Up until recently, with the firmware updates, they would reset their focus when you turn the camera off. And now there's an option in not only the Mark II Zs, but also the original ones with the firmware update where the camera remembers the focus points. You could turn off the camera And this is why this is critical, because, you know, we experience this. You go out, you want to focus while there's still some light, especially when you have a mirrorless camera where you've got to deal with viewfinders and, you know, where it's not optical viewfinder, it's electronic, because you need an object to focus on, whether that object is infinity or a slightly distant foreground object. I say distant, you know, something 50 to 100 feet away, whatever that might be. In this case, we wanted to focus on those rocks. And we were close enough to them that there was a difference between focusing on the rocks and just setting the camera to infinity focus. The rocks would have been a little bit out of focus, at least with my 20. Now, your 14 is a little wider. You might not have had that issue.
Yeah, it wasn't much of an issue. And what I did with the Rokinon, because I, you know, it was relatively new, I wanted to see where it achieved infinity focus. Mm-hmm. And like a lot of lenses, it will focus past infinity if you right. want to. And it turns out that the infinity mark on that lens, at least the one I have, is extremely accurate. And I checked it, you know, just during the daytime, it's stuff way out there. And in the center, it was great. And I tried checking just at the edge and it was fine too. So it's like, okay, that's where I set it. And I was relying on there being enough depth of field at infinity to handle the rocks. And turns out there was. The photos came out fine.
And as you go wider on the focal length, as you get shorter, you get that effect. Mm-hmm. I saw a difference with the 20, but I was very glad that I had that option, because I think when you're out in a field, once it gets dark, if you screw up your focus point, you run into some real challenges to get it back. Mm-hmm. What do you do? You know, how do you deal with it? And if you have an autofocus camera, it can be really hard if it's dark to focus manually. You can use a spotlight on your foreground. That's usually what I do. You know, put a spot, and then you can engage the autofocus. And I found the Z7 II worked great for that. There was one point where I just put the focus back to where it needed to be because I had bumped my AF on button. With a manual focus lens, you don't have that problem, provided that you've set the lens correctly in the beginning, and you can use a variety of mechanisms to maintain that focus, not the least of which would be just put a little gaffer tape on the focus ring so that it doesn't move. You didn't have that issue, but, you know, it's one of those things. So if you use autofocus, you do have to be careful that you set your camera up so that when you hit the shutter release, the camera isn't engaging autofocus. So with an autofocus lens, that means either putting your camera into manual focus mode after you've set the focus, or making sure that you're using back button focus, you know, and you've got the shutter release focus disabled, because you do not want that camera to try to focus, because if it's in the dark, if that happens, it's the telltale sign of doom. You start hearing the focus racking and it's like, oh goodness. So you need to be in what's called release priority, which will allow your camera to take the picture if the camera thinks the scene is out of focus. And it's not that the scene is out of focus, it's just that the autofocus sensors are not able to confirm focus to the camera. So you definitely want to be that. And you solve that problem by being in manual focus. You solve it with a manual focus lens. So so one of the things we wanted to discuss today was some of the pros and cons. Should you get a manual focus lens for night photography? Should you go with an autofocus lens? What should you do? And there's as with all things, there's a bunch of things to consider. Mostly you start looking at, you know, functionality, price, and optical quality, right? I mean, those are all the things you start to factor in.
And how versatile you want it to be.
Right.
Is this something that you're really just going to use for night photography, or is it something that you also want to use in many other situations?
Right. So just as a starting point, let's just mention that for night photography, the two ingredients you need are wide, and by wide, at least 24 millimeter equivalent, but usually wider than that. You want something in the 20, you know, somewhere between 14 and 20 millimeters if you want to have any chance of getting the Milky Way to look you know, otherwise it just gets messy. You have to start doing panos, and I can't even imagine. I know people do that, but I couldn't even contemplate doing it. And then you want a fast aperture, and by fast aperture, it's got to be at least f/2.8. You can do night photography with an f/4 lens, but it will not be the same because the fainter stuff, like the clouds in the Milky Way, don't show up unless you start using extremely long exposures. And then you've got the problem of star streaks and things are moving.
Yeah.
So in order to make it work.
Or ISOs that end up getting a little bit rowdy.
With these fast lenses, we were able to keep our ISO down to 1600 or less. In most cases, I was able to do that because I could shoot with my lens. In this case, I could shoot it f2, f2.2, f2.4, and I'm fine. What about you?
I shot at 1600. I ended up in Lightroom pushing it up, you know, to an equivalent of a higher ISO a little bit, just to brighten it a little bit further. Mm-hmm. So you could make the case I was kind of shooting at 3200. It doesn't really matter, you know, way camera senses work. You can do it in RAW and has the same effect. So that's what I did.
With the important thing being shutter speed becomes critical because at some point for regular star photography, for Milky Way photography, as your lens gets longer, you know, if you're in that. So, for example, if I did exposures longer than about 10 to 13 seconds, I could start to see star streaks. I could see the movement. They're not going to be a big deal in the final output because, you know, I'm not blowing up to 100%, but you will see them, especially with these higher resolution cameras. So you really need to be under, you know, 15 seconds or less. And the only way to achieve that is by bumping up your ISO and opening up your aperture. So the more aperture you have, the better. It means you can use a lower ISO and get a cleaner shot for the same shutter speed.
And in, you know, in terms of lens versatility, something like the Rokinon 14 millimeter lens, I mean, it can certainly be used for many other subjects because it has so much depth of field. Focusing is not a big deal. But you know, in general, I would rather have a wide angle zoom in that range, you know, in terms of versatility, even if it's not quite as fast. That's just what I would generally prefer using over something like this. So this becomes a little bit more of an astro-only lens in a way.
But and that's a valid point because when you go out and you're going to spend some money on an astro lens because chances are it's not going to – I mean, there are 2.8 zooms like the 14 to 24 Nikon, you know, the Canon one we talked about is coming out. Or, you know, they've got 2.8 super wides, right, that are excellent. But these are expensive lenses, and most of the time they're not necessarily what you want to be bringing along when you're on a trip anyway. They're just bigger and heavier, and they wouldn't be in the category of your everyday lens. Like, we both have that 14 to 30 f/4, and it's a wonderful lens, partly because it is so small.
Right.
But it's not optimal for night stuff. So now you ask yourself, am I going to invest in a lens? What should I get? Should I get an autofocus lens from my manufacturer? Should I buy one of these third-party lenses? And we've said it before, there's nothing wrong with a manual focus lens on a mirrorless camera for nighttime photography, because most of the time, once you set focus, you're done. You're really, there's no need to autofocus. In fact, you don't want to autofocus. You don't want to bump it. So it can be an advantage once you've set your focus properly.
Yeah, and one nice thing with this lens is there are Lightroom profiles for it. You know,
that's good.
Correct distortion, correct vignetting. So you don't have to mess with manual things on that. It's pretty nice.
So then it comes down to optical quality and build quality and those things. And so, as you mentioned, you can kind of span the range of prices with these third-party lenses, these Rokinon / Samyang.
Venus Optics.
There was another one that was Bauer, I think, is one. And there, and the Samyang, Bauer, and
Rokinon,
I think, are all the same, with just different.
They're all Samyang lenses. They just go under different names in different places.
There is an element of you get what you pay for. So like you had mentioned, there's one that you didn't end up getting, which was less expensive, but optically it's not mad, you know, it's nothing special, but it's an option for people who just want to try something once in a while. It's not a major part of your repertoire.
Yeah. And the other thing that I, you know, because I wasn't able to try those cheaper lenses, is that there really was quite a difference in construction quality. They were older ones and weren't built quite as well. And then this one, it's built beautifully, honestly.
Yeah, it was very nice. I looked at it when you were shooting. It was very good. So, well, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, what matters is the images, right? And so the question was, did you get photos that you were happy with?
I did.
Yeah, me too. And I'm still working on going through some of them. But I definitely was glad that the autofocus lenses didn't reset their focus position every time I turned my camera off.
Yeah, it was and the location, you know, being able to shoot from the deck of the yurt, that was just so cool because, you know, I got the camera set up, I had a cable release hooked up, and it was, you know, plenty long that I could sit in a comfy chair right by it and just, you know, periodically as light changed, you know, hit the button.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, one of the things too, we should point out with nighttime, you know, night sky photography, is that you really don't have a lot of opportunities to really change your composition around that much. We did a little bit of that here because we had different rocks. I know I took a series that I'm going to turn into a star trail. You know, I pointed north. I haven't processed it through yet. I've got to load it all into Photoshop, but that's going to happen. And, you know, so you set up at a location and you're going to have probably from each night, you're going to have one, maybe two shots you're happy with. Why? Because some shots you've maybe got planes going through with lights or satellites or streak. You know, there's going to always be something. The angle is going to be different. Maybe a car drives by and lights things up, and that can be good or bad. I mean, it just depends on what happens. I know that there were some cars in the campground that lit up some of the foreground rocks, and I think, you know, looking at my shots, I'll be able to work with that because it actually did a light painting for me. So it's an option. But you usually rarely come away with one of these sessions with more than about two or three photos that you like.
Yeah. And one of the things that I just did as we were talking is I, you know, after we first set up, I took some shots before it really got dark. Mm-hmm. And I was just looking in Lightroom at them and looking at the rock formations and how sharp they actually were when I had the lens set to, and they're sharp. You know, I can bump up the exposure and practically see grains of sand in the sandstone. And these were, you know, 40, 50 feet, 15 meters, somewhere in that range from where we were at. So it doesn't look like that was a problem.
So one thing, I mean, we'll put links to these lenses and stuff that we use along with some photos over on our Image Doctors Facebook page. Which for the people who listen know that that's where you can reach us. But one other advantage of these third-party lenses is that they're often available in a variety of lens mounts. And even if the lens mount isn't native to your camera, oftentimes you can adapt them to your camera. The other thing, too, is that if you have more than one camera system, you can get one. And then by using adapters, you can use one lens on multiple systems. And that's something that you can do much more easily with that lens that you bought than say, the Nikon Z lens. You can adapt the Nikon Zs to other cameras, but it gets a little fickle. You need the right adapters, and it can be messier. So with a manual focus lens, you don't really run into any of those problems. You don't have to worry about autofocus contacts working. It is nice with this one that it passes EXIF data properly so that your, you know, Lightroom in your case can read the info and apply the necessary profiles. But even if you don't have that, it's a thing. It's a flexible option for those people who might be considering more than one system. Because one thing too is that this particular lens right now is not available in native Z mount. It's available in Nikon F mount, so you would have to then adapt it to your camera, right?
They make a different 14 millimeter that's a 2.8 that I think is also a recent design that you can get for a Nikon Z system or a Sony E mount, or I think they have a Canon RF one too. But then, you know, for the most part, those are the kinds of bodies you're going to use them on. There's a way to get the Sonys on the Nikons, and it wouldn't be bad for this.
Yeah. We haven't tried that lens. We don't know. It's newer. We don't know.
It's a little bit different.
And at f2.8,
it was more expensive.
Yeah. It means you're shooting it wide open. You're not going to stop an f2.8 lens down to shoot, for example. So anyway, it's just one of those things to consider, but we liked
it. I'm happy with my decision. Yeah.
We went from being, you know, painfully cold to just, okay, it's really hot out here, but I'd rather be a little warm out on the deck at nighttime and be able to function and not wear gloves to operate my camera than to be frozen. So
yeah, it was pleasant then. It was a little bit hot to sleep later, but you know, it was
we survived.
Pleasant being out on the deck.
Well, is there anything else we left out, Rick?
I don't think so.
Anything. Cool. Well, again, for those of you listening to this and you got questions for us on astrophotography, you can leave us your questions. I do have a night sky ebook available at my website that's still valid. It will tell you about what settings to use and that kind of thing, and how to go about finding that sort of subject matter. Until next time, thanks for listening and happy shooting.
All right. Bye-bye.